Religion on the Line. 2 hours of exploration into the world of spirituality, faith, hope, love, or the hot buttons of today. Talk about it now. 576-7710. And now, Religion on the Line.
Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line here at KCMO Talk Radio, 710 AM, 103.7 FM. This is the time and this is the place for you to engage in conversation. We're welcoming even station 1440 AM as well from Topeka, through which we broadcast. And we are welcoming you to an intersection between the human and the divine about what matters most, what about our faith, our belief, our superstitions from time to time, and all the rest. Give us a call at 576-7710. 576-7710. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl, Social Justice Consultant for the Archdiocese of Kansas City and Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
So we're back from the storm.
Yeah.
We have had a couple of monsoons come.
Yeah. But,
not a tornado, not a hurricane, but something approaching that. With 75-mile-an-hour winds about a week ago, and then we just got deluged. I think, was it 5 inches of rain in a day?
Yeah, something crazy.
Something like that. And, Michael, I think that a system has come through Chicago as well, hadn't it?
Yes, but we've had flooding in the suburbs especially, but not the power outage that you report. God forbid, were there any loss of life because of the storm?
To my knowledge, I haven't heard of anybody dying. There were reports of people being rescued from possible death, and we had some dramatic scenes out at Coach's Bar and Grill. That was maybe the most famous or infamous one, which down, Michael, if you know the metropolitan area, at 106th and Warnell, that whole intersection was completely underwater.
Yeah, that happens with some frequency, but I'm sure it was more remarkable and quick this time around.
This was pretty bad. So.
Yeah. But yeah, we broadcast from Mission, and the whole city of Mission pretty much was blacked out. Which I learned something. You need electricity to go on the radio. So when we got to the building, it was all blacked out. So if you were trying to listen to Religion on the Line last week, we were here.
I've heard we were here. The best show of ours they've ever had.
but there was no power to the building. So so it's good to be back.
Do you know how long the station was off the air by any chance?
At least during our entire show.
Yeah, I think we come on at 6, and I kept tuning into various stations that Cumulus has here, and it wasn't until like 9:30, I think, that they were back on. So, yeah, it wasn't just our show, but a lot of different shows. So.
Yeah, for sure, and a lot of people who had challenges, I'm sure, but one hopes we're moving in the right direction and that people will be well, safe, and sound. But Karen and I are going to be leaving Tuesday for an extended trip to Alaska. So I'll give you the exact dates, but I won't be able to be on the show for a couple of weeks.
Well, we hope also, Michael, that you'll see orca whales and any other kind, too.
Yeah. Well, we're certainly have that as part of our schedule. Now, whether the... People, isn't that interesting? Whether the animals we hope to observe have decided that they're planning on being with us, we don't know yet. They haven't. It's not unlike the great old fundraising story, Bob and Bill. You know, we've got half the job accomplished. The people who need the money have decided to accept it. Now all we got to do is convince the people who have it.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Well, Michael, what is on your mind this morning as we go into the breach with regard to religious topics?
I suppose more than an aside, albeit it does have current political implications, Monday evening begins a commemoration in the calendar of Jewish life called Tisha B'Av, the ninth of Av, and it's a commemoration, a fast day, remembering the destruction of the ancient temple, Solomon's temple traditionally destroyed on the ninth of Av, and the so-called second temple or Herod's temple destroyed on what in the Jewish calendar would have been the ninth of Av in 70 of the Common Era. And other catastrophes are associated with that date in Jewish life. So it's a fast day, a day for reading mourning prayers. The Book of Lamentations is part, I don't mean mourning as in the AM, I mean mourning as in sad prayers. The Book of Lamentations, which is traditionally assigned to Jeremiah, is also read, and a variety of mourning practices are adopted for the day, remembering the destruction of the ancient temple. And the contemporary news, of course, is the contretemps between the Palestinian people and the Israeli authorities, and the involvement of the Wafa, the administrative body that is a body of the Jordanian religious authorities that administers the Temple Mount or the Noble Sanctuary, however one wants to refer to the site where the tradition has it, the temple was located. On a different note, I was reading a book review on a book called Built on Bones, which is an attempt to discuss the agricultural revolution. And it's, I'm reading it, and my goodness, this is a story about Cain. Populations adopt agriculture, and they die earlier than hunter-gatherers, exhibiting more stunted and distorted bones, more tooth decay, more exposure to viruses, and more evidence of malnutrition than their foraging predecessors. Concentrated populations, and after all, the biblical tradition assigns to Cain that he was the first city dweller, right? Concentrated populations are accident-prone niches for epidemics where filth and pollution accumulate, while deprivation ensues from widening inequalities. Yet farming and urbanization conquered most of the world with rapidity. And as soon as I read that line, my goodness gracious, it really is a longer-winded way of saying what the Bible says. That aside, I certainly prefer when our show doesn't get into politics, but this is one that I can't help myself. The title is of the headline of this news item is Trump to Law Enforcement, Don't Be Too Nice. And in effect, he's suggesting, I'll quote him. He also said police didn't need to use their hands to protect the heads of those they were arresting as they put them in the cars. Quote, when you guys put somebody into a car and you're protecting their head, you know, like don't hit their head and they're just killed somebody, I said you can take the hand away, okay? The comments drew some cheers, but now there's an extraordinary pushback, especially from police authorities.
From police chiefs and the Association of Police Chiefs. Yeah. And one of the other things, Michael, is that let's say he thinks that this is humorous and that he's just joking. Why joke about such a thing? What leader would do that?
Well,
it's morally reprehensible. I think you're right to go there. I don't think it's political. I think anybody that talks this way should be called to task and raised to a higher level of morality.
Yeah, well, I think it's a moral question.
Yeah.
You know, how we treat people is at least as important as how the people we claim we're incarcerating or arresting, because they're not guilty yet of anything. You know, even the ugliest among us in how we treat each other. But this one reminded me, and I had it for last week. I'm sure you guys have thought about it as well. My life cycle starts off with, among other things that are tropes that invoke certain kinds of reactions, Kitty Genovese, the woman who was repeatedly stabbed in New York, and people heard her screams, and no one, quote, wanted to get involved. And then I skip to New Bedford, New Hampshire, where a woman was repeatedly raped in a bar, and the rest of the patrons didn't get involved. Hmm. Then an episode many years ago in the Kansas City area, where a woman who gave up her child for adoption, the child, then an adult, had discovered when adoption records were open that her his biological family, the mother specifically and some siblings, was in desperate need of a bone marrow transplant, and the mother refused to even take the test to find out if she might be compatible, because I owe nothing to him. Mm-hmm. The extraordinary indifference of that was striking. But most recently, this painful episode in Miami where Florida teens recorded and mocked a disabled person as he drowned.
Mm.
You guys familiar with this
no,
one?
No, is this? I have not heard about this. Have you, Bill?
No.
Wow.
This was Saturday, July 22nd, Chicago Tribune. Authorities in Florida say five teens who watched, laughed, and made a video as a disabled man drowned in a retention pond can be charged with failure to report a death. Now, the interesting thing is that in most states, there is no requirement that you help someone in extremis.
Right.
The irony for me is in Jewish law, there's an obligation.
Yeah. Michael, we need to take a break, we're going to break right now, pay some bills. We'll be right back here at 576-7710. That's the number to call to get in on the conversation, ask a question, or make a comment here at Religion on the Line. We'll be right back after these messages. Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line. Thank you for allowing us to be part of your Sunday morning and part of a meaningful conversation, we hope and trust, about the things that matter most, our highest values, our deepest commitments. Give us a call at 576-7710, 576-7710. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with the Archdiocese of Kansas City, Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
And
may I finish up my item?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I saved this one because July 26th of 2016, a year ago that date, was the murder of Father Jacques Hamel while doing Mass in Rouen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is an article that appeared last week out of the Wall Street Journal. It's an editorial column called Houses of Worship, and this one was written by Christopher White. Archbishop Lebrun, who's the Archbishop of Rouen, was in Poland for World Youth Day at that time when he got the news. Soon received an urgent request from François Hollande, then the French president. Fearful of civil unrest between the nation's Christians and Muslims, Mr. Hollande requested the Archbishop speak with him before making any public statements. What will you say, the President asked the Archbishop. Quote, I am going to pray and ask God to help me love my enemies, he replied. Mm-hmm. A few months later, Mr. Hollande admitted the prelate had stunned him. He actually seemed to believe what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And his tone of forgiveness and reconciliation was crucial after the attack. The following week, Muslims throughout the country were encouraged by Islamic leaders to attend Mass as a show of solidarity with their Catholic neighbors. It goes on, but what I thought was absolutely awesome was that reflection. The president was stunned. He actually seemed to believe what he thought.
Yeah. Wow.
Two more. This is from a lengthy article that appeared. It's under the byline of CNN, but I got it off the internet, about quote-unquote outlaw pastor Rob Bell. Does that name mean anything to either of you?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So, quote-unquote, he shakes up the Bible Belt. Just one small thing, because this item is, I thought, interestingly expressed, and is one of the things that regularly surfaces in our conversations. Bell is still in the business of making audacious moves. As I understand it, he became a quote-unquote outlaw pastor because he determined that he couldn't reconcile the notion of God, love, and hell. But mm-hmm. Bell is still in the business of making... He was in Atlanta as part of his Bible Belt tour to promote his new book, What is the Bible? He has ventured into the belly of the beast, that's speaking in some of the reddest and most patriotic states in the United States to deliver a risky message. Now, here's his risky message. He's telling audiences that a person should read the Bible literally, not literally. Literally. That people who talk the most about the Bible often know it the least. And now here's where he does get very political. 81% of the white evangelicals have voted for Donald Trump, he declares. You voted for a leader who has a zero moral compass. I don't want us to deal with that.
Okay.
But I do think that if anybody has any suggestion, reflections on this particular pastor, and certainly I thought he captured one of our conflicts on our show.
You know,
literally versus literally.
And you mean literarily or literately?
Well, I'm quoting literately as in literature.
As in being literate and being smart, actually. Yeah, okay.
Well, I hope that's not what he meant, but I wouldn't be surprised if it is.
Yeah.
You know, my phrase that I've used, I take the Bible too seriously to take it only literally.
Only literally, and I use it all the time.
And I've got a last one and then one in reserve in case, who knows what
happens
to the show today.
You know what? Go ahead. Let's go.
This is in the sports section. Do either of you know the name Ryan O'Callaghan?
No. Bill, do you know that?
No.
Is he a soccer player?
No, he was a former Kansas City Chiefs football player. 6'7", 330-pound offensive tackle.
The name again?
Ryan O'Callaghan? O'Callaghan.
Okay.
That he understood himself to be gay, and the article is about that he was planning on killing himself once his football career was over, and he first came out to Callum would be dead now, he says, if he hadn't been for the Chiefs' clinical psychologist, who became the first person to learn he was gay. Just telling her was like a huge weight off my shoulders.
Yeah.
When he began confiding his secret to others in football and to his family, O'Callaghan was astounded by their nonchalant reactions. Did everyone totally understand what it meant to be gay? No, but they knew what my alternative was. They were just happy I was alive. The former chief player is now speaking openly about his sexuality. People need to understand that we are everywhere. We're your sons, your teammates. You just don't know it yet. Anyway, I thought it was something that all of us need to be sympathetic to in this culture, this society, etc., whatever our positions on what behaviors are right and what behaviors are wrong. That's my stuff, guys. I'm done. Good night.
You got a lot. You got a lot. We've got time, Bill, for a couple of your suggestions. We'll get to mine here in a minute. We've got a caller already, but I don't want to go because it'll be too quick. We'll have to put him on hold and then come back. So what's on your mind?
Big news this week. Governor Sam Brownback was appointed by the president to be the ambassador for religious freedom. I am sure there are people in Kansas that are delighted from both perspectives. I personally am. I think he's going to do a wonderful job. He's got a strong track record in that issue. I've actually had a chance to. I once stopped by his office in Washington, and he was there, and he shook my hand. I got to meet him, but I think that's exciting. I think for our state, and I think it's exciting for our country. And it'll be interesting to see sort of what fallout that has here in the state of Kansas that his absence is going to cause.
Who's the lieutenant governor?
Oh gosh.
Never mind.
The doctor. There's the doctor. Yeah, and then
is that person a candidate to become governor? Because I know
the lieutenant. Yeah, the lieutenant governor will become the governor as soon as he steps down from that role. And then there is, and then there'll be a race. And he'd be the incumbent. He could run. Chris Kobach has already announced he's.
That's why I was asking. Yeah. I know Chris is
because of his positions on immigration. I certainly. That's troublesome to me, but so anyway, that's some big news. I imagine we might have some callers that might want to talk about President Trump's recently announced ban on transgendered people serving in the military. I'd be curious to have a discussion just from the aspect of the religious perspective. Certainly, you have a tension here. Where you have a nation who wants to be compassionate, just as you spoke of recently, Rabbi, about someone who self-identifies as gay, you know, feeling so ostracized that he harbored suicidal thoughts. So we can talk about that. 816-576-7710.
We're going to be right back after these messages. morning. You've got Religion on the Line here in a beautiful section of the country, the heart of the country. And we are here, and you are here as well. Thank you for allowing us to be part of your Sunday morning. If you're listening in your car, in your buds, as you go about your house or your apartment and listening to us on the radio, however you are checking us out, we are glad. Thank you. 576-7710 here at KCMO Radio, 710 AM, 103.7 FM, and 1440 AM, KMAJ over in Topeka. Thank you for allowing us to be part of your Sunday morning. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with the Archdiocese of Kansas City in Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
Before we go to any more topics, Bill, why don't we go to Richard in Topeka. Richard, you've got Religion on the Line.
Good morning, gentlemen. My sorrow and prayers to the citizens of Kansas City that suffered from the rising waters, but I'm sure we added some here in Topeka through the Kaw River, because we had a horrendous rainstorm as well.
Did anybody lose their lives, Richard?
No, none whatsoever, but our runoff took care of it, evidently, and we just kind of added to your grief there in Kansas City with the Kaw River, I'm sure, and all the tributaries. But I would like to address Michael Zedek's comment about the disregard for one human to the other.
You're talking about the Miami episode?
Yes. Is it possible we're feeling... Well, I'm almost certain we're feeling the repercussions from the loss of teaching our children. The Ten Commandments were removed, as we call the thou shall and thou shalt not rule of law, which also is in the Christian application of law. We were forced somehow by certain elements of this country to remove those from the school system, to remove them from the courts. There has to be a remembrance of God, and when you show that back, then the children that don't receive that encouragement, then their children are also not beneficiaries of that loving God. And that's all I needed to say.
All right. Richard, can we add to potential causes for this, in addition to kind of, you know, from one perspective, you believe that it's the kind of extraction out of or the removal of moral standards. On the other extreme, it could be, not extreme, but the other end of the argument could be that there is a separation of church and state, but we won't get into that. We're going to honor your right to your opinion and others' rights to their opinion. What about
if you have a statement on the wall that says "Love thy neighbor as you love yourself"? You think maybe somebody might read that?
Richard, would you allow? Would you want a statement from the Quran about moral rectitude and the standards for behavior to be put up in a courtroom?
Well, we were this country. I'm not in Saudi Arabia. I'm not in.
No,
Iraq,
we're in the country that has religious pluralism.
This country was founded on Christian and Jewish. Christian concepts.
Okay.
So when we try to mix the batter, then we come out with the end result of this doesn't taste good.
Well, you're very generous, because there's some people that would exclude Jews and wouldn't have them be, to use your metaphor, part of the batter.
The Jews and the God of the Christians is the same God.
Well, so I'm saying, Richard, there would be people that would object to that kind of affirmation. I believe that's the same. I think it's also
they're free to object. I was in Vietnam, and I would. They have the right to believe what they want to believe, but don't force me not to believe what I want to believe and promote what I want to promote in my belief.
And do you, if you listen to what you just said, that's the basis for the argument for separation of church and state. I said I did not want to kind of debate that. I wanted to get to another topic. It is also a religious perspective that could go to the heart of how come these teenagers didn't try to rescue this man walking into a retaining pool. And by the way, a retaining pool is not a swimming pool. It's a place where water runoff goes when there's big rains because they have a sandy soil. It's hard for it to seep down, and basically so that the waters don't go into your house, they will be engineered in a neighborhood to go over to a retaining pool. And this man walked into it and subsequently drowned. That's what I get, Michael, from what you reported earlier.
Yeah. But Kitty Genovese was long before the Ten Commandments were removed from the schools.
Right.
But I do think public schools are in a different category. Is the moral decline of our country, if there is a moral decline in our country, there's certainly behaviors that we are distressed by, and thank God we have a moral compass that at least allows us to be distressed by them. But I suspect that there's more than one factor, even as Richard has suggested, that this is the specific that would restore the country. I think there's much more going on, including the challenge of failing schools, including the challenge of fractured families, including the challenge of economic inequality, including the challenge of the distractions of our entertainment industry. I don't think it's one factor alone.
Yeah,
but historically, this country was not. It was founded on humanistic principles, and the founders were not all Christian, and they purposely did not found a Christian country or a Jewish country. They certainly had a biblical understanding of themselves as a new promised land, but. At any rate.
Yeah. Well, what I was getting to was what Robert Putnam gets to in The Loss of Social Capital and mm-hmm. the lack of community-mindedness, meaning we view ourselves too frequently, Richard, as radical isolates, meaning everything is and only should be a individual decision at all times, and if all individuals would be moral and upright, then everything would be hunky-dory, or at least a lot better than it is. But there's evidence that a lot of factors mitigate against that sense of community-mindedness, and one of them is the prevalence of television. This is without regard to the content on television, just the number of hours that people view television and are alone in their home rather than going to a fellowship dinner at a synagogue or a gathering for a town hall meeting discussing topics or even going to the movies with a group of people. We'd rather bowl alone. And he has a very interesting, and then he has a counter argument about some solutions called Better Together. Anyway, I would commend those two books, and I think that's part of the conversation.
Richard, are you still with us? Okay, I guess Richard's
apparently
listening.
Not.
He's listening on the line in Topeka. I think Richard does bring up an interesting point where it may be impractical, or we've may reached a state where we can't have the Ten Commandments in our courthouses or such because we can't agree on religion, and we want to respect that there are different people are of different faiths, and not all those faiths are Judeo-Christian. But I think it does bring up an interesting point of what happens when you take God out of the public square because you're afraid that it might be perceived as an endorsement of one particular religion over another. It does have the law of unintended consequence takes place in which what Pope Benedict I think referred to as a practical atheism, where we're not going to pray together when we're at public events because we can't agree on what God to pray to, or we're not going to acknowledge God in any kind of thing that touches the government in any way. It does have the chilling effect of of sending the message in particular to our youth. Well, God, what God thinks and what God wants for you in your life doesn't really matter. So I could see, you know, if you looked at it that way, what do we do in this current secular context where we have, we're right now in this age of history, we're leaning strongly secular and trying to keep God, trying to keep all mention of religion out of the public square. Does that keep God out of the public square? And how do we deal with that? Maybe the answer isn't the Ten Commandments, but how do we deal with that?
Yeah, I'd just like to know, who are these people trying to keep God out of the public square, when I know that my friend William Barber is right in the middle of the public square when I see the U.S. Conference of Bishops regularly, consistently giving edicts and commentary and opinions, etc., when there's a lot in the religious realm on all sides of all aisles being expressed. It's America at its best when we were that way. Who's keeping who out of the public square? That'd be my question, Bill. We got to take a break. We'll be right back after these messages.
KCMO, Kansas City's most stimulating talk.
There's absolutely no doubt in my mind. Enough is enough is enough with this guy.
Kansas City's KCMO.
Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line. 710 AM, 103.7 FM. It is great to be with you, and thank you for allowing us to be part of your Sunday morning here at our phone number, 576-7710, 576-7710. And you can put an 816 or a 913 in front of that, however long distance you're calling from, and we will get you on. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with the Archdiocese of Kansas City, Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple Bene Yehuda.
Want to give a shout out. That music reminds me that this afternoon the Community Christian Church will host the, I don't know if it's 7th, 8th, or longer, July Jazz Jam. Isn't that a nice sounding thing? And Michael, if you were here, you could.
They were running out of time to do it, for goodness sake.
July Jazz Jam, almost waiting to the last. It's always the last Sunday of July, and a good timing. There's not too many other things conflicting with it on the jazz calendar, and it will be this evening, 7 o'clock. I think doors open at 6:30, maybe. But if our listeners know better than what I just said, please do give us a call. 576-7710. This is at 46th and Main. Come one, come all, and enjoy a great amount of jazz. I think one day there will be a book that's put out about the use of jazz and other alternative non-organ related instruments and music forms, genres in worship. I think it's one of the more interesting things that's happened. I think it's a revolution. Every great transformation within religious bodies, Michael, I don't know if this is true of Judaism, but in Christianity, especially in the United States, they've always been accompanied by a revolution, and also in Europe, they've been accompanied by a revolution or a transformation in the music forms that have been employed and shared in worship. You can almost chart it. I mean, this goes from Martin Luther. You'll hear about this more later, October date of his nailing the 95 Theses on the door at Wittenberg, about how he went into the bars and saloons and wherever people were drinking and borrowed those songs and put Christian words to them and brought them into then Catholic churches, and that became Lutheran churches.
If someone wanted to go to the Jazz Fest, is there a charge?
There is a charge. It's $20 in advance before the doors open. So you could go to church today, go to one of two services, and drop by the church office and buy it for $20. It's $25 at the door. So this is one of the two things that Community does per year. This is not a fundraiser for worldwide disaster relief, as the Carol Fest is in December. which, and this is amazing, that event has raised over $200,000 in its existence for worldwide disaster relief since it began well over 20 years ago now. Anyway, we have other topics. One of the things that we that melds the religious, or what should we say, the public square at least, and morality, and that is the conduct of our president at the Boy Scout Jamboree this last year. It was pretty remarkable. If you have a comment about that or want to discuss how you experienced it, give us a call at 576-7710, 576-7710. Also, this is a topic. I'm going to a last Sunday of a senior minister this morning. James Bo Crow at the Overland Park Christian Church will be retiring officially. His last sermon as senior minister at that institution will be this morning, I think, at 10:30. And I'll be there to say a prayer and experience appreciation. How do we say goodbye to a religious leader? What are the best ways?
Here's the door, Rabbi.
And so, and Michael, a lot of people don't know this, but rabbis have contracts, right?
Many
usually,
do.
Many do.
Not and, all, but many.
And many do have year-to-year contracts. And and then some will have 5-year contracts or 2 years or 3 years. Then that's supplies stability for their families. But then others will have longer. But many, many have year to year. And I think Unitarians have this as well. But at any rate, it would be interesting to say when somebody comes to the end of their tenure and is officially at retirement time, how do we say goodbye to a religious leader?
When a In fact, Bob, if I may build on that one, it would be invaluable if some listeners might comment on some of the ways in which, if they've had that experience, which many people have, of having to bid farewell to a much loved or at least a long-tenured minister, how the congregation says farewell and how that person leaves has enormous impact on the DNA of the institution.
Yeah.
And what kind of place it is, in fact, as Ed Friedman of Blessed Memory used to say, there are some congregations that are plums and there are some that are pills.
Interesting. Let's go to John real quick. John, you've got religion on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I wanted to correct you on what you said about Martin Luther using bar songs for hymns. That's a... well, I guess you call it fake news now, something that that is not backed up by historical fact.
What kind of songs did he go and get that were not part of church music at that time?
He wrote songs. He was a composer, both words and music.
Okay. I need to go and check my historical sources and either correct them or just...
You can take my word for it. And also, I want to say one other thing.
Just because of fake news...
The origin of your expertise on this is?
I'm a Lutheran. I've studied Martin Luther. I've read a lot about him, even more so this year. I've read many articles...
Interesting.
...talking about from historians saying that.
Okay.
Thank you.
John,
you got to run.
John, we'll talk about Luther if you can hold on, all right? And we're going to go take a break and be right back after these messages.